and time to go south. Not with Douglas Mawson, who went the hard way, but with Nikki Phillips from our science unit, who did it quickly. Nikki.
In January this year, I was lucky enough to be invited on a flyover of Antarctica. The flight was to celebrate 100 years since Australian explorers Edgeworth David, Douglas Mawson and Scotsman Alastair Forbes Mackay's epic journey across the Antarctic to discover the South Magnetic Pole. The trip was organised by the Royal Society of Victoria. On board were scientists and past Antarctic explorers, members of the public and a group of final year school students from all over the world. The flight was to take 12 hours in total from Melbourne, 4 hours down and back, and 4 hours admiring the Great White Continent. And so begins my trip to the Antarctic.
We're just on the bus on the way to the airport. Douglas, are you excited about today?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited just to see Antarctica and just see a bit more of the world.
How did you find out about the trip?
Our school got offered one place on this trip, and so they advertised it at one of the assemblies. It sounded like a really good opportunity to go out and see something, so I went and talked to the head of science afterwards.
We're going to go straight to gate 12. If I happen to walk past the sign, stop me. But just follow me and look.
Hello and welcome to Qantas Flight 2903 to Antarctica. Your aircraft is now ready for boarding through gate 11. We'd like to welcome all passengers holding boarding passes to please proceed to the flight attendant at the gate with your boarding pass in hand and have it available once again on board for inspection.
We've just taken off in our Boeing 747 on our way to the South Magnetic Pole. The magnetic poles are the vertical ends of the Earth's magnetic field, and the magnetic field itself is generated by the movement of molten iron within the Earth's core. Charlie Barton is from the ANU, and he's an expert on the South Magnetic Pole.
The position of the magnetic poles is determined by fluid motions in the Earth's core. And that's deep inside the Earth at a depth of 3,000 kilometres or more. And there you have molten iron sloshing around. That movement of the liquid iron convecting creates electric currents, and those electric currents produce magnetic fields, and they're responsible for the Earth's magnetic field and the position of the poles. And the nature of the motion at the North Pole and at the South Pole are really quite different. And so the magnetic poles, to a certain extent, behave independently.
Right, so they're not really opposites of each other?
No, they're not opposite, but they're not really free to travel anywhere.
Both the magnetic poles and the magnetic field are vital for life on Earth. The magnetic field acts as a big barrier against the cosmic radiation that's coming off the sun. So this radiation is instead funneled towards the poles and held in the outer layers of the atmosphere. But the interesting thing about the magnetic poles is that they're not in a fixed position. They're constantly moving.
They have two motions. One is a steady, relatively slow drift, and the other one is a daily motion. So the slow drift is caused by changes in the Earth's core and the movement of iron. And at the moment, the South Magnetic Pole is moving northwards towards Adelaide at a speed of about 5 kilometres a year. And the North Magnetic Pole is also moving northwards, so they're both moving northwards at the same time, but much faster, at about 50 kilometres a year. So those are the steady drift rates.
As well as drifting, the magnetic poles can actually reverse. Now, this process doesn't happen overnight, but a few times every million years. The reason for a reversal has only been discovered recently, and scientists believe it has something to do with a change in the motion of the fluid within the Earth's core. This produces a magnetic field in the opposite direction. But this whole process takes about 5,000 years. And the last magnetic pole reversal was 780,000 years ago.
But there is speculation that we are heading into a reversal now. One of the characteristics of a reversal is a weakening of the magnetic field. And we've seen the magnetic field weaken over the last 2,000 years. And even over the last 100 years, if you see diagrams of direct measurements of the strength of the magnetic field, that shows very clearly how much weaker it's becoming.
Well, the apparent weakening of the magnetic field has certainly had no effects on our celebrations up here. We're about to fly over the South Magnetic Pole, just as David, Mawson and Mackay walked over it 100 years ago. You can definitely feel the buzz of excitement up here. Everyone is jammed up against the windows on either side of the plane.
Okay, our predicted time. We are now 3 miles to run. Counting it down now. 1.5 miles, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, pole.
As we cross the South Magnetic Pole, the champagne's flowing, everyone's excited. But I can't help wonder about the three explorers. When they located the magnetic pole 100 years ago, there certainly wasn't any comfy cushions or celebratory cake for them. Only the harsh reality of Antarctica. Professor Edgeworth David, Sir Douglas Mawson and Alastair Forbes Mackay made up the northern party of Ernest Shackleton's Antarctic expedition of 1907 to 1909. When the Northern Party set out on the 13th of October 1908 to locate the South Magnetic Pole, they had little more than a compass to guide them in completely unexplored territory.
They set out with two very heavy sledges, and they also had a motor-driven tractor which they planned to drag the sledges with. Well, it's a very early stage that failed, and in fact poor old David has arm broken by the starting handle on that thing at an early stage, or severely damaged. Anyhow, they were left with the prospect of dragging these very heavy sledges for a journey through unknown territory, no mapping, no knowledge of the geography or the type of terrain. They used a dip circle and a sophisticated magnetic compass to determine where the magnetic pole was.
Okay, can you tell us what a dip circle is?
Yeah, a dip circle is essentially a compass pivoted on both sides, so that you can tilt it into the vertical plane. A normal compass is pivoted only on one side, a compass needle is, and it operates in the horizontal plane. Now, when you have one of these devices operating in the vertical plane, you're able to measure the angle between the Earth's magnetic field and the horizontal. So as you travel from the equator, the magnetic equator, where the field is horizontal, towards one of the magnetic poles, then the magnetic field becomes steeper and steeper and steeper until eventually it's vertical at the magnetic pole.
Douglas Mawson made an educated guess where the South Magnetic Pole would lie from estimations made 8 years earlier by the Antarctic explorer Robert Scott. But the Northern Party didn't know what direction the pole was moving in at the time. In total, the trip took the men 122 days.
They travelled much more slowly than they expected, because the terrain was worse than they'd anticipated, and so they were obliged to, it required all three men to drag one of the sledges. They would drag one sledge, distance of 3 miles or 5 miles, and then they'd go back and they'd get the second sledge and they'd drag that forward. So for every mile of progress, they were using miles in those days, they had to travel 3 miles. It wasn't until later in the journey, of course, when everything was much lighter and they'd had through a lot of their supplies, they could travel a bit faster. But by that time, they were already very, very exhausted. And David, of course, who started off as a fairly old man, he was 50 years old when he started, and he had his 51st birthday on the way back, he suffered more than the other two, who were younger men in their 20s. So they really reached the limits of what was physically possible. And they tell these horrific stories of having to spend 1 to 2 hours in the morning in order to get their mouths unsealed, because their skin had deteriorated to the extent where the blistering and fluids which were coming out of their mouths were freezing up and they couldn't open their mouths in the morning. And David's boots and his feet were completely shot and he was trying to walk on his ankles.
By mid-January, the men realised the South Magnetic Pole was further than they thought. They were already running low on food and time. If they delayed further, they would be late to meet their ship, the Nimrod, and risk being left behind. Mawson wrote in his diary on January 13.
We got up this morning to discuss situation. Prof wants to go on. I make proposal by which only 3 days extra needed at most, and then 13 miles per day. Mac then protests strongly against going on, says if we go on past the 15th, the headwinds and bad weather will retard us. At last, we agree. Mac wants us to swear we'll do 13 miles per day return.
It was at this point that Mawson showed exceptional leadership and is credited with saving the expedition.
Certainly at those later stages, when the other members of the party were weakening, he was a tower of strength which took them, carried them through the whole escapade.
When they arrived at the magnetic pole, were they over the moon? Were they so excited, or were they just too tired to even contemplate what they just discovered?
There's a wonderful quote about that. Shall I read it out? Because it does summarise very clearly how they must have been feeling. It was an immense satisfaction and relief to all of us to feel that at last, after so many days of toil, hardship and danger, we had been able to carry out our leader's instructions and to fulfil the wish of Sir James Clark Ross that the South Magnetic Pole should be actually reached, as he had already in 1831 reached the North Magnetic Pole. Ross, of course, was the first person to reach any of the magnetic poles. At the same time, we were too utterly weary to be capable of any great amount of exultation. So you can see in there that they were relieved to have done it, excited that they'd had this achievement, but also very worried about the possibility of getting back and being rescued.
Thinking about it afterwards, I found it really difficult to understand the mindset of explorers like David Mawson and Mackay. Did they have a primal need to conquer unexplored territory? Was it the pursuit of science that was the attraction, or were they just plain crazy? Saxon Boston is the great-grandson of Sir Douglas Mawson. He doesn't think his great-grandfather was crazy, just a product of the times.
I've heard stories of him falling down a crevasse and the sleigh actually, you know, jamming at the top, and he's in the harness by the rope. He decided this climbing the rope was a pretty tough gig, so he made it into a rope ladder, so he towed his sleigh with a rope ladder, so when he fell down a crevasse, the ladder was there to climb back up. So he was expecting a few more falls, which is pretty amazing to be expecting some more falls and what's going through your mind then. You know, I'm going to fall down more of these. It could be my final fall, but if it does jam again, let's make a ladder out of this rope so it's easy to climb up.
The harshness of Antarctica certainly hasn't faded since the Northern Party's expedition. Dave Poulin is an electrician. He wintered in Antarctica twice between 1979 and 1985 while working on the building program. Dave explained that you have to run by the clock in Antarctica because the sun is no guidance, and being able to work each day is totally dependent on the weather.
It could be shocking, and at Mawson Base, the katabatic winds come nearly every day at up to 150 to 200 kilometres an hour mid-morning and rage like hell for hours, and it stuffs any plans you had up, so you have to work through that. You still have to work, but it's immensely difficult. Outside in the blizzards with the driving ice, the wind, everything's getting blown around. It's very difficult to even walk outside. And that is the part of life that really stresses you out. It's the strain of just surviving.
So Antarctica is the coldest, driest place on Earth. What's the draw card? Why keep going back?
It's just awesome. The scenery's fantastic. The bird life and the wildlife, the seals and elephants, whales, colours are unbelievably, indescribably clean. It's so pristine. It's perfect.
What does it smell like?
It doesn't. It's as simple as that. It doesn't smell. There's no bugs in the air. Nothing breaks down. Scott's dog is still there, tied up. It doesn't bark a lot these days, but it's still there. The seals, 1,000-year-old seals, have been found out in the wastelands behind Davis. Things don't break down. So if you cut yourself, it won't heal until you come back to Australia. If the cut's bad enough, it will make you come home on the first available transport because it won't heal while you're there. Fish, for instance, down there don't taste of anything. They're easy to catch, but why would you bother? Because they don't taste of anything. There's no pollution in the water at all. It is completely clean. So you've got to add that much sauce and spices to the fish. You might as well eat the crayfish out of the freezer and not bother catching the local stuff.
What was it like being away for 18 months from your wife and family?
It's very difficult. The difficulty is the second Christmas, I would have to say, for a family bloke. You think, oh, geez, idiot, I should be home. This is silly.
Being away for months or years at a time is a reality of life in Antarctica. So does its attraction still exist today? Put simply, would a bunch of 20-year-olds be able to hack the conditions of the great southern continent? Here's some of the students after the flight.
Probably not. Like, it just seems so, like, tough, the whole living conditions of it, and I would probably struggle. What they did is such an achievement.
Yes, especially since it was 100 years ago and the technology was much more inferior, and, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Do you think you'd ever go to Antarctica on the ship?
I would love to do that.
Would you be scared going down there?
No. I love challenge, and I love, like, physical challenges especially, and, like, being able to, like, climb a mountain or something. If you can do it, then just do it.
So now that you've been there, do you have a different feeling about how we should maintain Antarctica or protect it?
Yeah, it's kind of almost depressing just thinking about how it's changing already, the loss of the ice caps and...
So do you think you'll do anything different now that you've seen Antarctica and seen the changes that have happened over the last, say, 100 years?
Well, to be honest, I'm already really environmentally conscious, but say with my environmental group at school that I'm co-chair of, I'll just be able to take this firsthand knowledge back and just try to instill the knowledge in the other members of the group and other members of the community that now that I've seen it, I have proof that we really need to maintain it.
I think that going down there and seeing it for myself, it puts the whole environment thing in perspective, you know, because you can see the impacts, you can see the ice breaking up, and it's not just on the television. So what I've really learnt is that it's real and it's happening and the environment's changing and that we've got to do something about it.
Nikki Phillips, and for some pictures of Nikki's trip, you can go to our website at abc.net.au/rn and select The Science Show. And if you want to contribute your own pictures, perhaps, or Antarctic thoughts, you can go to Polar Attraction at Radio National's Pool, also through abc.net.au/rn.